Hello, I'm Alex Milne and welcome to the 64th Edinburgh Festival, the largest festival of performing arts in the world. In this programme we take you up to sample the flavour of the fringe. We meet performers from all over the world and from diverse cultures that make up this rich festival of entertainment. In our first interview we meet Tomek Balkowy, who has worked at the festival for many years. But first a song from Eddie Reader, Jamie Come Try Me.
My love, Jamie, if thou would kiss me, love, what could deny thee? If thou would be my love, kiss me, love, who could deny thee? If thou would be my love, Jamie, if thou would kiss me, love, what could espy thee? If thou would be my love,
And now over to Anthea Page, who's talking to Tomek Balkowy at the New Town Theatre.
I came from Poland 27 years ago. In 1984, I came first time to Edinburgh with a show which I directed in Café Theatre upstairs in London. And I absolutely fell in love with the city and obviously with the festival. It took me another 6 years to come back. And this time I came back to the festival with my students. I used to teach in a drama school in London. And my students decided to form theatre company. And they invited me as their artistic director. So I decided that we are going to Edinburgh to do the festival. And we came first in December to find a space for our performances. And then we decided that we are going to run our own venue. And we took over Hill Street Theatre, which was the oldest still running venue in town. And this year is its 36th year. And I used to run it for 20 years, and this year I just passed it to someone else, Tim Hawkins, who is very, very big professional promoter and producer. And I hope that there's going to be another 35 years of this fantastic venue. We took over Newtown Theatre in Masonic Hall 4 years ago. And I hope that I will be here for another 20-something years until probably theatre companies will say, Tomek, you are too old to run the venue for the Fringe.
So how many shows are there this year? There's a colossal amount.
In Edinburgh itself, I believe that there's over 2,000 companies. And probably is around 2,000 shows, or even more. I don't have a data yet. We will have this data probably from Fringe Office in the next couple of weeks. But this looks like that this is, according to our amount of participation company, this is the biggest ever festival, which festival is 64 years old. That is oldest and biggest festival on earth. So I'm very privileged that for 20 years I've been part of it, and I've seen development of this festival into good ways and to bad ways as well. But that's how it is. Life changes, and market, and especially performing arts market, is changing as well, and we have to. Adapt to it.
The theatre is going through a resurgence at the moment. How important is Edinburgh for people participating?
Edinburgh is always important for participants. If you can think that in this city has been presented 350 new plays a year. So if only 10% is good, this is enormous way of new drama coming to the British drama. But it's not only that, because companies from all over the world are coming here. And since, I think, 10 years ago, festival started to change and is not strictly arts festival anymore. This is the marketplace. This is a performing trade fair. It's not organized, but is the biggest performing arts trade fair. This year, we know that we are going to host over 1,200 buyers, promoters, producers, programmers from other festivals and receiving venues. So this is extremely important place for development of the theatre in Britain and around the world. And if you think about the history of the festival, anybody in this world, in theatre and performing arts, somehow started in the festival, in the Edinburgh Festival Fringe. You know, Andrew Lloyd Webber, his first musical was presented here. Tom Stoppard, his first play was done here. Even Al Pacino was here as a student. So everybody started in this fantastic festival.
So have you got any secret hot tips for this year?
Oh, I can only say that everything in our venue is fantastic. I mean, we program a very international program. We have companies from China, India, Spain, Poland, Czech Republic, and obviously Great Britain. And we've got three big British names. Rodney Buse, who is Likely Lad from the 70s, who is doing his Three Men in a Boat, fantastic show. Rainer Hirsch, who is doing the show about Victor Borga, extremely funny and very intelligent piece of theatre. And obviously, man who is connected with the festival for years and years, Pip Utton, who is doing his one-person shows which he writes for last 18 years. This year he brought his vision of Dickens. This is the show about Dickens talking about himself and about his writing and how much money he made by reading his books. It's a fantastic show. Just yesterday got 5 stars review, so I believe that after Adolf, after Bacon, this is going to be another fantastic, internationally acclaimed show by Pip Utton.
And that was Thomas Berkowy, and he was talking to Anthea Page at the New Town Theatre. Not only does the festival attract people from all over the world, but people of all ages. The next feature is about a play, The Trojan Women, performed by schoolgirls from Bristol. Before we talk to the director, Sarah McCormack, we're going to hear some of the girls from Redland High School sing a song which they composed themselves. It's called Sing the Tale of Troy.
Well, that was a song from the Trojan Women as performed by the girls of Redland High School. And I'm here with the director, one of the teachers from the school. Hello. What's your name?
Sarah McCormack.
Tell us about the production that you've brought to the Fringe.
Myself and the classics teacher from Redland High, Sally Knights, have been wanting to do a production of The Trojan Women for years. It's an obvious play for a girls' school to tackle because it's a majority female cast, and it's about issues of femininity and women and women's rights and so on, and we've wanted to do it for a long time, but it's not exactly school production fare because it is a Greek tragedy. It's a very dark and a very bleak play. And we've also wanted for years to come up to the Edinburgh Fringe. We do a lot of drama at Redland, and we like the subject, we like the work that we do, and we're very proud of the work that we do, and I wanted to get it into a wider forum. And we decided to bring the two ideas together and to come up here for the first time, as far as I know. This is the first time Redland High has ever done this. And it's been great. We've been having a fantastic time, actually.
Have you got any plans to perform again in Bristol?
We won't be able to, unfortunately, because a lot of the girls involved in this now are Year 13 girls, and they will be off to university in October. So as soon as we get back, they're sort of into preparing to go away, getting their examination results and so on. And therefore, it is kind of a once-only deal. We will obviously be doing other drama productions, but this one is strictly Edinburgh only, sadly.
Some of the girls were excellent in their roles. Have they any ambition to go on the stage as their further career?
Yes, I'm very much hoping. In fact, one of the girls who was in the cast this evening, the girl who was playing Helen of Troy, has just been offered a place at the Guildhall School of Drama for this October, and that's quite unusual for girls to be accepted, or for students to be accepted straight from school into drama school. But there are other girls lower down in the years, sort of younger members of the cast, who have expressed an interest in studying drama and becoming professional theatrical exponents in some way. We do have a little bit of a history now of it, of girls going on to do drama in certain levels. The costumes of our production were designed by an ex-Redland High girl who has studied costume design and has been working freelance but with the Welsh National Opera recently, amongst others. We've got an ex-student of ours who's currently studying drama in education at UWE who did much of the choreography. Some of the choreography was done by one of the members of the cast, so done by a 17-year-old girl. So, there is a tradition. We've also got ex-students who've gone on to drama school, gone on to do drama at university. It's a subject that, I mean, as head of drama, obviously, I'm very interested in it, but it's the subject that increasingly girls are beginning to take up beyond school.
Well, the singing, as you heard earlier, was beautiful. Are they in a choir at the school?
They are actually a singing group. They're called The Six, in fact, but there are only four of them with us on this occasion. They have been a sort of group within the school. They've recorded a CD. They've done a lot of concerts around the area. They won the Prom on the Close a couple of years ago. They've got a bit of a history of working together at the school and in school events and outside of school as well.
So has this been a good experience for you so far in Edinburgh?
Terrific. It's been terrific. We've had a really good time, and it's been so interesting and exciting for the girls, and lovely to see them perform and hold their own in this kind of forum where they're up against people with bags of experience. And we've done pretty well. You know, we got a 4-star review from the 3 weeks paper, which is, you know, that's up against professional groups and semi-professional and student groups and so on. So we really, it's been a very positive experience, dramatically in terms of their theatre and in terms of just the experience of being here, because the Fringe is wonderful, so exciting.
I think what came across was the vulnerability of the women left alone after all the men have been killed, and that's quite a mature feeling for girls of such a young age.
Yeah, it's a very significant play, I think. It's what is interesting. I'm not the classics expert. Sally Knights is the classics expert. But I what's interesting for me is that a play that was written something like 400 BCE can be so pertinent about issues that we are still dealing with now. And women's roles in society and women's standing and status within society is such a significant theme within that play that I think it just jumps off the page at you. It's really interesting. And I think it's been difficult for them. Of all the plays I've ever done, we've talked more with this one about what it means. And it's, I think they've got some interesting stuff out of it, some interesting insights out of it into women's status, and it's lovely to be able to tackle something that so deals so directly and unashamedly with those issues. It's astonishing that it's as old as it is.
And that was Sarah McCormack, who is a teacher from Redland High, but was also directing the girls from that school in the performance of the Trojan Women at the Edinburgh Festival. The next song is another track from the Eddie Weedis CD, The Songs of Robbie Burns. And this one is Auld Lang Syne.
Should auld acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should auld acquaintance be forgot and days of auld lang syne? For auld lang syne, my dear, for auld lang syne, we'll take a cup o' kindness yet for the sake of auld lang syne. We twa ran about the braes and put the gowans fine. We've wandered many's a weary fet since auld lang syne. For burn from morning sun till day, but seas between us broad have roared since auld lang syne. I am surely you'll be your pint stout, surely I'll be mine. We'll take a ride, get well and walk for the sake of auld lang syne. For auld lang syne, my dear, for
That was Eddie Weeder singing Auld Lang Syne from The Songs of Robbie Burns. Now, not only do you get people performing at the Edinburgh Festival, you also get footwear apparel, as we find out in this next interview.
I'm upstairs in the cafe in the Gilded Ballroom at the Edinburgh Fringe, and I've been joined by two very distinguished people.
Two very distinguished and pedantic people who like to point out it's not the Gilded Ballroom. So if anybody's looking for the Gilded Ballroom, you're probably going to end up in another city. It's the Gilded Balloon.
Oh, sorry.
That's okay.
So I'll start that again.
Why not start that again?
I'm in the cafe at the Gilded Balloon at the Edinburgh Fringe, and I've been joined by two very distinguished people. They're Socks. Hello, Socks.
Hello, we are the Scottish Falsetto Sock Puppet Theatre, and so am I, and so is he. And we're at the Gilded Balloon. Emphasis on the balloon. Lots of emphasis on the balloon, I find, is a good way of saying it. And yeah, that's where we are. That's what we do. What was the question?
Are they female socks or male?
They? Who are we? Scotch Mist. Though we're male, and so am I, and so is he. We're both male socks. Male socks. That sounds like a ridiculous way of posting severed feet.
So one of them's wearing a kilt.
She seems to be interviewing some sort of translator. I don't know who she thinks she's talking to. He's wearing a kilt. I'm wearing a kilt. It's a royal Stuart. Although we are entitled to wear our clan tartan. Yes, I'm a Farker. I've long thought that.
Can we hear a bit from the show? Because the show is Kevin Sullivan.
It's not either of those words. None. Even if you've got his name right, which is Kev F. Sutherland, his name does not feature in the show. He has nothing to do with the show. The show is the Scottish Falsetto Sock Puppet Theatre, and this year's show is the Scottish Falsetto Sock Puppet Theatre on the telly. That's what it's called. That's what it's called because we want to be on the telly. What sort of things do you like on the telly? Well, when you're watching the kids' TV in the summer holidays, and there's that one that's on the weekday mornings where you've got these big round folks and they've got the big fat and the multicoloured, and they sort of talk like it's English, but it's not really proper English. You can't understand what they're saying. Oh, I know that one, the telly, the Jeremy Kyle show. That's the one I quite like, yes. Or there's that one, yes, there's that one where he drives along in an open-top car with big ears. Oh, you mean the Andrew Marr show. Yeah, we could do the Andrew Marr show. We could. Or we could do something funny. Yeah, we'll work on that.
Do you ever...
Don't talk to us. There's some bloke behind us. She keeps talking to this bloke behind. I have no idea. Nobody's ever done that. Nobody has ever been presented with us and wanted to interview the fella behind us. That's a bit like if Naomi Campbell walks in the room and you start holding your hands out to catch a phone thrown by somebody else. It's just not what you do.
Okay, Socks. Do you ever fight with each other?
No, we fight with interviewers, very clearly. Yes, we do, actually, because he's a chunky woolen knit, and he's a chunky woolen... I was about to say something which he probably couldn't broadcast, and so every now and again he will take an opportunity to take my finely honed script, which I write, and he will ruin it for everybody. So I'm the one on the right, by the way. I have to keep him in order, and I... know my place.
So what's on the show tonight, Socks?
On the show tonight, we will be presenting our attempts to be on the telly. Yes, yes, we could do formats of TV. Yeah, formats of TV, like things like a game show, or we could do a quiz show, or we could do a musical comedy show. No, I don't think we could manage that. That would be beyond us. But we could try anything. Horror, mystery, you suggest it, we could do anything tonight. I can tell you're expecting more. Magic. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, would you welcome all the way from Las Vegas, the great Sock Dini. Wow, just a second ago it was him and now it's me, yes, the great Sock Dini. I am the master of the mystic arts. He's a master with a mystic bottom. Men envy me. He's got a big wand. Women fall at my feet. He trips women over. I'm a master prestidigitator. You can't do that. There's people watching. Look away, children. And tonight... myself and my glamorous assistant. Who's that? Well, that's you. Oh, I'm not sure I can do glamorous assistant. Could you channel Debbie McGee, given the opportunity, right, do that? So, my glamorous assistant and I will be sawing a sock in half. You're kidding. I kid you not. Get ready. Go and get the box. That's largely visual. That won't work on the radio. Okay, let's just imagine the sound of sawing. And then let's just imagine the sound of a sock being sawn in half. And now, let's listen to the applause. OK, without an audience, very hard to pull that one off.
So, Socks, you've been a fantastic success at this year's festival. You must be very proud of yourselves.
We don't like to let things go to our heads. What with being sock puppets, that would be a bad move indeed. So, yes, you know that pride comes before a fall, and above-average sales come before occasional below-average sales. That's not the catchy adage that pride comes before a fall is, but it's ever since so similarly true. So what we have to do to make sure that people come time after time is we have to go out onto the streets and flyer. Flyer. Yes, we stick pieces of paper in people's faces. That sounds lethal. Yes, we have to beware of regular paper cuts. But that's what we're going to do. We're going to go out and sell our show. Good night.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the show tonight. Okay. Well, the socks are going back in their bag now.
So the socks are not making any particular noise, and I don't suppose you can pick up the sound of my hand smelling, which is what tends to happen after the boys have been out.
They're smelly socks then, aren't they?
This is a thing that, I don't know many people who manipulate sock puppets, but when you do manipulate sock puppets, your feet smell just as much as your hands, or vice versa. I apologise, by the way, for the accent. A lot of people get slightly perplexed that the boys sound like the boys, and I sound like this. I am originally from Aberdeen. I was kidnapped at a very early age and brought down to England, and this is the damage that was wrought.
You're a local lad, aren't you? You're Bristol, sort of Clevedon.
Well, I have lived in Clevedon for many, many years, about 20 years, in fact, I've lived in Clevedon, and love it. And the boys began life in Clevedon. Every single Scottish falsetto, sock puppet, theatre, prop, costume, and indeed the boys themselves you've ever seen were made in Clevedon.
Kevin, you're also a very clever cartoonist, apart from being a brilliant...
I call the socks comedy. It's just stand-up comedy, except that the performer is sitting down and waving his hands over his head. So it's slightly stupid stand-up comedy. And as well as doing that, I write and draw comics and teach kids how to do it. I write and draw for, amongst others, The Beano. I did Roger the Dodger's Reservoir Dodge, The Bash Street Werewolf, The Bash Street Zombies. Look for my stuff in Beano Annuals. It's a good place to find me. And
what's your signature? Because it's quite famous, though.
Kev F, K-E-V, a gap, and F. Because that's my name, Kev F Sutherland. The F stands for Findlay. Long story, no point in elaborating. The least interesting part of the interview, in fact, is the fact that my middle name is Findlay. Kev F, you look for that name hidden in the background of my comics, and you'll say, oh, they're brilliant.
With the Beano, do you ever introduce new comic strips into it, or is it the stock items?
I have been lucky enough to get the chance to do lots of things with the great characters. So I've had runs on the Bash Street Kids, doing the Bash Street Kids Adventures and doing Roger the Dodger, and I've put all of the great characters into my stories. And occasionally I've smuggled my own in. But the thing is, if I were to stick new stories into the Beano, I wouldn't own them. So one of my characters, Hot Rod Cow, began his life appearing in the backgrounds in my Beano stories, and I'm now doing him as his own comic. He appears on my website, and soon you'll be able to buy Hot Rod Cow. There's also, by the way, a comic strip version of the Scottish Falsetto Sock Puppet Theatre. Go to my website, send me an email, and you can have one of those.
And what is your website?
Comicfestival.co.uk. And it's so called because I used to run the Comic Festival in Bristol. That's the reason why every May there's a thing called Comic Expo in Bristol. It's because in 1999 I started the Comic Festival in Bristol, and when I finished it, the guys from Comic Expo took over, and it's still in Bristol every year.
And that was Anthea Page making a valiant effort to interview a pair of socks at the Edinburgh Festival. You're going to hear a Negro spiritual now, Old Man River, sung by Paul Robson, as the next feature is an interview with the director of a play about him.
There's an old man called the Mississippi. That's the old man I don't like to be. What does he care if the world's got troubles? What does he care if the land ain't free? That old man river, that old man river, he must know something, but don't say nothing. He just keeps rolling, he keeps on. Soon forgotten, but all. it just keeps rolling along. You and me, we sweat and strain, body all aching and racked with pain. Tote that barge and lift that bale, you show a little grit.
Fringe press area, and I've bumped into a lady who's been to Bristol.
Yes, my name is Olushola Oyeleye, and I'm a theatre director, and I came to Bristol last summer with a production of Call Mr. Robeson, which we performed at Bristol Old Vic, to sold out houses. And it was very good. And one of the comments that came from front of house, in fact, was that they had never seen a production that moved them in such an extraordinary way, and we got lots and lots of plaudits. So really excited to be up at the Fringe, and very excited to have performed at Bristol Old Vic as well. It's such a wonderful theatre and a wonderful city.
So you've brought two shows up to the Fringe. Can you tell us about those?
Yes. The first show is called Ma Joyce's Tales from the Parlour. It's a comedy drama set in Liverpool, and it tells the wonderful story about Ma Joyce and tells about her history of living in Liverpool and her family life. When we think of Liverpool, when we think of Scouse, we don't think about its ethnicity and the diverse communities that are there. And just like Bristol, Liverpool has one of the longest African communities, you know, historically in this country. It's the longest continuous African community. Obviously, part of that's to do with the Atlantic slave trade and also colonialism, you know, during the 1950s and 60s. But that history obviously embeds those communities, both in Bristol and in Liverpool, and makes sure that we have a perspective on the really diverse and interesting communities of why people happen to be where they are. So with Ma Joyce's Tales from the Parlour, she has this wonderful ironic story about how her African heritage, her Welsh heritage, her Irish heritage all intermingle to make her who she is. So we say, if you think you know Scouse, you've never tasted it like this before. Because we talk a little bit about the fact that we take a slice of Ireland, bite of Africa and a dash of Liverpool spice to make up this extraordinary story, which is full of fun and laughter, but also full of human interest. So I think it would appeal to a Bristol audience, any Bristolians who are around, and obviously an international audience. The second play is called Call Mr. Robeson. And it's an extraordinary life story with musics of Paul Robeson, who was an activist, a civil rights movement, very, very well known around the country, particularly in Wales and Scotland. And he has connections in Bristol and all over, because many people will have seen him perform. And the story just explores the fact that because of his indictment in the House of Un-American Activities during the 1950s, where he was called a communist, his story has all but been forgotten. People remember him for songs like Old Man River. They'll remember him for playing his famous Othello with Peggy Ashcroft. And many people will have had the experience of seeing him in rallies, trade union marches. He was dearly loved in this country and lived here for a number of years with his wife, Essie. But isn't it interesting how history chooses its heroes and sheroes? And there's a revival, a really lovely revival, recognizing people who came pre the civil rights movement in America, in the United States. and he's one of those heroes. And we're delighted to be presenting this play, which has already won awards at the Brighton Festival and is selling out very fast here at the Edinburgh Fringe 2010.
So do you have a website?
There's a website for call. It's called www.callmrrobeson, that's robeson.com.
So do you think you'll be bringing the other play to Bristol, as the Robeson play was so well received?
We would be delighted to do that. I mean, I think it would. The lovely thing about both these plays is that they will attract a young audience who will have a kind of educational experience, but also a much older, more mature audience who will recognise the references in both those plays, those eras of the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s and beyond. And we'd be delighted to bring that play. We are at the moment sort of booking tours for the autumn and the spring. So perhaps we'll have the opportunity to bring both plays together again. A triumphant return for Call Mr. Robeson and a wonderful introduction to a Bristol audience and a national audience for Mar Joyce's Tales from the Parlour.
And that was Anthea Page, and she was talking to all you Scholar, all you Lear, all about the play Call Mr. Robeson, which is being performed at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Ever fancied living or working in a lighthouse? Our next production is by the Plasticine Men, written by Simon Day, and is set in a lighthouse on the Pembrokeshire coast.
I'm in the press centre, and I've met... What's your name?
Simon Day.
Tell us about your play. It's quite interesting.
Thank you. Our play is called Keepers. We're the Plasticine Men. It's based on a true story about a lighthouse in Wales in 1801, 20 miles out to sea off the coast of St David's Head. Two lighthouse keepers stuck in the middle of the ocean in a tiny wooden box on stilts.
Sounds scary. What gave you the idea for the play? Because you wrote it, didn't you?
We devised it as a company, yes. I heard about this story a couple of years ago, actually, just on the radio, and I thought that would make a really good theatre show. So I thought about it, sat on it for about a year, and then I met my performers and we talked about it, and we started making it about 18 months ago. Together, it's a fascinating true story, and I just thought it was crying out to be told on a stage, really.
What was the connection you mentioned earlier with Treasure Island?
We've devised the show, like I said. We didn't start with the script, but we have improvised a lot of text. And as we've gone on, we've obviously scripted elements of that. And trying to find the right kind of language for the piece was quite difficult. So I started to read a lot of novels, a lot of nautical novels, and a lot of novels set around 17th, 18th centuries. To get some language, and Treasure Island was such a rich book for me, Robert Louis Stevenson's Treasure Island. I read and reread it, and I stole quite a lot of words and phrases, so prizes for anyone who can pick any out of the show when they see it.
So of course there is the lighthouse connection with Stevenson's father, who designed many of the lighthouses around Scotland.
Yeah, I mean, the more I found out about lighthouses as I researched the play, the more fascinated I became, really. They're incredible structures built by incredible people with such a vision to impose their will upon nature and the world, and that's what our show's about, really, about that mission.
What's the oldest lighthouse ever built, then?
Oh, there's a question. I think it would be the Pharos in Greece, and we're talking a couple of thousand years ago now. It was more of a mountain with a fire on top. Technically, that's probably the one.
Are they becoming redundant now, lighthouses?
Manned lighthouses, certainly. I mean, most of them are automated. I think all of them are now automated. The Smalls Lighthouse, where our story is based, there is still a lighthouse there. It's now about three times as tall and built out of concrete, and that's automated now. And with GPS and obviously computer and satellite technology, they're becoming less and less important, but they're still used. They still play a vital part in keeping sailors and ships safe. They're amazing structures still, and I think they've got a really important place in our kind of national heritage and our history.
Would you like to live in one yourself?
I've thought about a little weekend away in one, maybe. There's a few out there, but I don't know if I could do what these guys did, which was spend 4 months, 200 years ago, 20 miles out to sea in a place smaller than a bedsit, to be honest. I think that would drive me mad.
So are you going to bring the show to Bristol?
We played Bristol, actually, in May this year at Mayfest at the Tobacco Factory, but the play has changed quite a lot since then. So we're planning to tour between February and May next year, and hopefully we can stop by Bristol again and share it with the punters down there.
What's your website?
It's www.theplasticinemen.co.uk. The show's called Keepers. It's on at 4 o'clock at the Pleasance Courtyard.
And that was Simon Day of the Plasticine Men Company, and he was talking about their performance of The Lighthouse, which is being produced at the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. And now this is Eddie Reader, and she's singing The Banks and Bays of Bonnie Doon by Robbie Burns. And that was Ye Banks and Braes of Bonnie Doon by Robbie Burns, and it was sung by Eddie Reader. Another person from the West Country at the Edinburgh Festival Fringe was Trevor T. Smith from Stroud. He was there to present his one-man show, a monologue, on the subject of dementia, called An Evening with Dementia. Here he talks about the problems and philosophizes on current-day changes, which this subject, dementia, brings to light.
My name's Trevor T. Smith, and I live in Stroud, and we've come up here to do our show called An Evening with Dementia.
That sounds jolly. Tell us more about it.
Well, there are 820,000 people with dementia in the United Kingdom, and this show will make you cry and make you laugh. It's really to raise people's consciousness to what dementia is. I had an audience yesterday with people crying. I mean, because so many people know people with dementia. But the person I'm playing, this old man, it's a one-man show. I sit and talk, and he's not a victim, he's a victor. He, inside his own mind, he is still working and still there, although he says at the end he doesn't talk to anybody, but he talks to his old... He's an actor, you see, and he's still talking to his audience over the footlights.
Is it because people are living longer that there's more dementia around?
I'm sure there is. And also there's all things like the food we eat with all the preservatives in it and all the additives that have happened over the last 50 years or so. We have changed our lifestyle, haven't we? Also, people play with their minds with drugs so much now. I mean, I met a social worker who was terrified of what's going to happen in a few years' time because, you know, so many people who have suffered under drug abuse and have become schizophrenic and so on, and they... Schizophrenic is a funny word, isn't it? I mean, I think scientists love to put people into boxes and to put people into the dementia box, but I imagine, I think, that we all get a bit suffering from dementia as we get older. Everyone, and in different ways, we're all individuals. And I think they're now saying there are so many different sorts of dementia. There's this sort of dementia and that sort of dementia. Yeah. Well, there are millions of sorts because we're all individuals and we all go that way. We all age.
But is it also because, do you think, we're so used to visual rather than sort of mental activity? People don't read as much.
That's right. I mean, I worked as a teacher in a Steiner school, and there we try and not get children to watch television. If you tell someone a story, they visualise it immediately in their head. If I said to you, there's an old man who lives at the top of the hill or wears a red hat, you've already got the picture of an old man at the top of the hill with a red hat. If you watch television, you don't do that. It just goes, you get everything in colour. It's extraordinary. And so, I mean, it's not a muscle, but it's like the muscle in your mind that is the creative, imaginative bit is not working. And so, of course, it weakens.
Can you describe the difference between dementia and Alzheimer's? Because I think people are confused about... They sort of lump it all together sometimes.
Yeah, I'm not a medical person. I don't know, but I believe Alzheimer is more of a disease and dementia is not a disease, it's just a weakening, I think. But I may not have that right. You must check up and talk to doctors about that.
So what inspired you to write a play about a rather sad subject, really?
Well, I think I did it because it's topical. I mean, I think theatre has to be topical. It has to be now. I mean, the art is always about the future. I think you can always hear that so much in music, that any great composer has always written music that nobody has ever heard before. Mozart, Beethoven. I mean, Goethe listened to Beethoven's music and said, the Fifth Symphony, that's just noise. Even a great man like that couldn't hear it. So we're always going into the future. And I think dementia might be something for the future. I think the world we're living in now is a very strange one. We're going towards a great change. And everywhere we see that, in climate change, the economy, everything, the whole extraordinary technological, electric change that's happening in the world. So, I mean, I think we're going towards this great change and we don't know what's positive and what's negative in that.
Do you think that's because almost we're losing touch of ourselves, that science is taking us over?
I think we're going through an evolutionary process. Human beings are being pushed into a whole new period. It's 2,000... They say, some clever ones and so on, say that every time 2,000 years happens, there's a change. Christ was born 2,000 years ago. We've lived in Christianity. Christianity hasn't even started yet, has it really? I mean, it's putting in people in prison and saying it's justice when really it's revenge a lot of the time. Though I know there are many great people working in the social services who are really... And I think so many things are changing morally for the better. For instance, we now, as soon as a soldier is killed in Afghanistan, we hear it on the news. I mean, less than 100 years ago, 20 million men died in the First World War, and it was, well, they died. They were soldiers. That's what they did. But now every single soldier is mourned, and that's correct, and that's right. But that's a tremendous change. Women have now got the vote. Homosexuals are now able to have relationships, an extraordinary change.
I mean, that's an extraordinary thing. So we are changing. There's this great evolution happening in human consciousness, which I think is very exciting. And I think some of the things we think of as negative might not be. I mean, as I've looked, I haven't said anything about this in the play, but of course, I meditate. And of course, what I'm trying to do when I meditate, clear my mind absolutely to the present, is precisely what people have got when they've got dementia, strangely enough. Now, that may be silly to say that. And of course, I don't want to take... I know people are suffering. I know they suffer. I know the people that look after them suffer so greatly too. And it's an awful thing. But where are we going? What is happening?
You've brought the play to Edinburgh. Is this your first time at the Fringe?
Well, I was here in 1971. I was at the Lyceum. I was part of the Nottingham Playhouse Company in those days. And they came, and that was the Fringe proper, the Lyceum. Jonathan Miller was directing King Lear, and I was in that. Then before that, I was here in 1962, I think it was, with Sheffield University. I wasn't at Sheffield University, but they had done a production of The Jew of Malta there, and they couldn't, not all the students could come up, and so they asked other people. I was in my teens. I thought, oh yeah, great. I was a drama student. Up I came with them. Yeah. But since then, I haven't been back. I haven't been back yet since 1971.
Are you enjoying being back?
Oh, it's wonderful. It is hard work. I mean, I haven't seen anything yet, because I've been publicising the show. My Janet is here as well, and we're both working full stop. You know, we just don't stop. There are thousands of people here. I think there are something like, how many? Do you know 3,000 shows? I mean, that's wonderful. It's so exciting, I think.
Are you going to bring your show to Bristol?
I don't know, quite possibly. I was asked to bring it to the Bristol Steiner School, and I might do that when I come back to Bristol. Yeah. Yes, I have a friend there.
Well, that's about all from this year's Edinburgh Festival, 64th and the biggest ever. So it's goodbye from me, Alex Milne, and also to our reporter, Anthea Page. The show was produced and edited by the two A's. That's Anthea and Alex. Thank you for listening to us. And to finish off, this is Eddie Reader, and she's singing Robbie Burns' version of Ye Jacobite Spaniel from Community Radio. Bye-bye.
Ye Jacobites by name, Londoner, Londoner. Ye Jacobites by name, Londoner. Ye Jacobites by name, your faults I will proclaim, and your doctrines I must blame, and you shall hear, your doctrines I must blame, you shall hear. What's right and what is wrong, by the law, what's right and what is wrong, by the law. What's right and what is wrong? A short sword and a long, a weak arm and a strong, far to draw, far to draw. A weak arm and a strong, far to draw. What makes heroic strife? Fame to fire, fame to fire. What makes heroic strife? Fame to fire. What makes heroic strife? To whet the assassin's knife, or haunt a parent's life? We bloody war, or haunt a parent's life? We bloody war. Alone in the state, I let your schemes alone in the state. I'll leave your schemes alone, adore the rising sun, and leave a man alone to his fate, to his fate. I leave a man alone to his fate.